Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
He would appear in the dark.
Hunting, literally hunting.
He was a killer.
World of Secrets, Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm James Reynolds. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, it's conversations with supporters of Kamala Harris. So, could a woman of colour become the next president of the United States? Well, that's what much of America has been asking over the past few days. And that question is at the heart of our discussions in this episode, including a chat with three black female supporters.
My daughter actually looks similar to her. She's actually gone to Halloween parties as Kamala Harris. She's worn the Chucks and Pearls. And I just look at her and she laughs. And she's like, how do I look, Mom? Am I Kamala? You know?
Things can move pretty fast in politics, but the United States hasn't seen anything quite like this in recent times, not perhaps since the turbulent year of 1968. A month ago, Americans watched Joe Biden's faltering debate performance against his rival Donald Trump, and the performance raised questions over the president's fitness to run again for the White House. And then 2 weeks ago, Donald Trump survived an assassination attempt. He was then confirmed as the Republican Party's nominee for the November election at a triumphant national convention. You can hear more of our conversations about that in last week's edition. And then things didn't stop. Last Sunday, President Biden posted on social media that he was standing down as a candidate, and he immediately endorsed his vice president, Kamala Harris, a former public prosecutor, as the Democratic Party's nominee. And 2 days later, Ms. Harris and her team secured the support she needed in the party, not to mention more than $100 million of donations. Here she is addressing a crowd of supporters in Wisconsin, one of the states you pretty much need to win in order to become U.S. president.
Do we want to live in a country of freedom, compassion, and rule of law, or a country of chaos, fear, and hate? And here's the beauty of this moment. We each have the power to answer that question. The power is with the people. We each have the power to answer that question.
There's plenty of discussion about Ms. Harris's background as a black and Asian American woman. Race, of course, remains a major political and social fault line in the United States. For our first conversation, we brought together three women of colour who all back the Democratic Party. Podcaster Kay is in New York. Ashley is a healthcare worker from Oklahoma City. And communications executive Kiosha is in Washington, D.C.
Growing up, I really wanted to be Hillary Clinton. I looked up to her. I wrote to her and Bill Clinton. I invited them to dinner when I was in third or fourth grade. Yeah, it's the whole reason I moved to D.C. and went to college here and I'm now here. I grew up with parents who are both Jamaican who did not actually teach me anything about what it means to be black in America. In fact, they were very much, you're in this country, you should be grateful, you can do anything here. And so I had to honestly learn the hard way what it means to be a black woman in America. I learned that on the job in life. So now to see Kamala running for office, the highest office in the land, I am not surprised because I always knew that was possible. I never thought it wasn't possible, but I am simply overjoyed that the moment is here. And I want my kids to see this and appreciate it, not in terms of necessarily, wow, we can do this, but I want them to almost frankly take it for granted, but also know that it will take work to make it happen.
Like Kiosha, I had that same experience of my parents just saying, you know, be grateful to be in this country. And so one of the persons that I really looked up to was Princess Di. I think it's because my mom loved her so much and my mom talked about her all the time and what she did and what, you know, how she was the outlier. And so my mom was also the matriarch of our family and she's the one that took care of everything. So I grew up seeing my mom take control of her family, made the hard decisions. But growing up, I also had to learn the hard way in this country and seek for myself. And that's how I started to kind of love politics, because I started to research. And Hillary Clinton was one of those ladies that I followed. For me, as a young Black girl from Jamaica, it was all new and exciting, but I had to teach myself and I had to do the research and I had to learn the hard way about the politics. I never wanted to be president, but I always thought that it was possible, but I never thought in my lifetime a Black president, much less a Black woman president, I never thought I would see that in my lifetime.
She is a Black girl down. This is a AKA, this is a HBCU grad. This is like, you can look at her on the internet and she is a Black girl down. Silk press every Tuesday, Black girl. And I love that because it feels like it's like seeing yourself on screen. Like I can look at my daughter and I can be like, hey, she does the exact same things as us. And representation matters. I know people like to disqualify it or like tamp it down and say that it doesn't matter. It so matters when you like, we always tell my daughter, you can't be what you can't see. Had I not known what a psychiatric nurse practitioner was, I would have never tried to become one. If I never knew possibilities that were out there, I would have never known. So the fact that my Black girl daughter can see a Black woman becoming the president of the United States, like, what can she not do? What can she not feel like she's capable of when she sees someone like her who is sitting down with a high comb to her head, just like she is, and who is went to HBCU just like she wants to go to? She sees her following the same path. And I love that Kamala is very, very adamant about stating messages about reproductive rights and bodily autonomy and just making sure that women of all colors know that their body is their own. And I heard her speech at Essence Festival recently and I was just so excited. And I was just so excited for her to be vice president at that time. And so now that she could actually be like the president, I am overjoyed. So yeah, I'm excited on both sides.
Yeah, I think for me, she was a former prosecutor, and that impressed me because Donald Trump, I'm like, okay, she's dealt with these dudes before. She knows how to talk to them. She knows the language. She knows what to do. She knows how to handle them. But like you said, she is a Black girl, down to earth Black girl, and her laughter is infectious.
Come on.
Listen, that laughter that they're criticizing now is one of the reasons why I love her so much. I love to see her laugh.
Sound like a cookout, don't it?
Yes, it sounds like we're all just sitting in our backyard and she, you know, we're having that girl talk and she's just one of us. And my daughter actually looks similar to her. She's actually gone to Halloween parties as Kamala Harris. She's worn the Chucks and pearls. And I just look at her and she laughs and she's like, how do I look, Mom? Am I Kamala? You know, so she's fully on board and she understands the significance of this moment that we're living in right now. And for me, as a woman and as a Black woman, I want to hear a woman talk about our rights. These men that are sitting up there that are trying to make policies about our bodies, just my brain is just not computing that. It's just hard to understand. And the fact that they have no idea what we go through. And here we are in this time, in this moment with this Black woman, this Black sister that knows what it's like to be a woman and can speak on our behalf is the most amazing feeling in the world. And I mean, I love it. I love her.
I gotta say, I agree. And I have to add, what I love about Kamala is everything that was just said, plus the fact that just taking gender aside, taking ethnicity aside, she is so experienced. And I don't want people to forget that. She is the most experienced person regardless of anything, for the job. You cannot deny that. And I know people want to throw all these labels on her, whether in a good way or a bad way, but she knows her stuff. She is the most experienced person for the job. And then when you switch over to identity, not only do I love the fact that she's a Black woman, but she's a down-to-earth Black woman. I mean, I'm here in DC. I have people I know who have attended Howard in the past 4 years, and they have talked about how at this point, Howard students are almost tired of seeing her on campus because she will just pop by to say hello. And I mean, the Vice President of the United States, and I know they're taking it for granted, but I don't, because what that tells me is she knows who she is, and she takes that to her office. But I just don't want people to forget once again that she's not going to just be representing the United States domestically. She represents us internationally. And when you look at the opposition and what's at stake here, I mean, she's just period, end of story, the best person for the job.
The most qualified Black girl does not get the job always. The most qualified Black girl, for some reason, gets disqualified by the silliest things. It makes me cautiously optimistic about this whole process because Kamala has everything ticked off. I's are dotted, T's are crossed. But for some reason, I'm like, they'll find some technicality and or some weird thing in her past or that is nothing. And they'll try to make it a big thing and that could possibly cost it. And it gives me a little heart palpitations. I'm not going
to
lie.
But that's why we have to roll up our sleeves.
But you guys know better than me that just firing up your supporters doesn't get you to the White House. Any presidential candidate needs to persuade the undecided and those who are not of the same sex or not of the same skin color. And how does Kamala Harris then persuade those other voters who might be undecided or who might just think, yeah, she's not someone I'd really like to vote for?
And can I tell you, my biggest fear is Black men and white women. Those are the two fear. I think the Black men have been a little leery of late when it comes to the Democratic Party. And I'm not sure how I've just been monitoring online, social media, Black men and their feeling towards Kamala and if they will support her. Because I know a lot of Black men that have been saying, listen, I'm going the other side. So now will they change their mind? And then white women that have always supported the Republican Party, will they now say, hey, here's someone who represents who I feel. She may not be a white woman, but she represents women. And I think, and I know the most qualified person for the job, will they now switch over? And also, when you're going to vote, those people that are saying, I will support her, when it's time to vote and they pull that curtain and they're alone with their conscience, right? Will they go for Kamala Harris? And that's my fear right now. White women and Black men.
I agree with you to a certain extent in that, like, so my boyfriend is a Southern Black man from Louisiana. Me and him had a really good discussion about this yesterday because I was kind of voicing something similar about Black men. And he was like, you know, first, get off Twitter, start there. Secondly, he was like, to me, not to you, that's to me. Secondly, he was saying that, you know, a lot of the men that he is in community with or that he talks to are chalking up to an economic issue. I don't like him, but I like the stimulus thing that I got, or I don't like him, but I like the tax breaks I got because I own a business. And that concerns me because I hear that from wide swaths of people, suburban white moms, some Black women, some Black men, like it's all pocketbook issues, which I mean, at the end of the day, you're wanting the greater good. But at the end of the day, a lot of people are voting to what is going to affect my family, my kids, the generations of my lineage, like what's going to help or hurt us. That's what scares me, is those pocketbook issues, because Trump is not doing it in a way that is good. It's benefiting all. It benefits some. And so those some that are being benefited are going to gravitate towards him. And that is what I'm scared of.
Democratic Party supporters Ashley, Kay and Kiosha. By the way, if you're wondering about the Chucks and Pearls, well, Chucks are a type of Converse branded sneaker or trainer. I should also say that as we record this program on Friday, Kamala Harris has yet to be formally nominated as the Democratic Party's presidential candidate, but that is now pretty much just a simple formality. I'm James Reynolds. This is BBC OS Conversations with supporters of Kamala Harris.
He was a kind of vigilante killer.
He killed at least 19 people during the 1980s in South Africa.
Very dark times.
People were desperate. We were looking for him. We couldn't find him. And nobody knew where he was.
Every single one of his victims was black.
He reached such a stage where he was now hunting.
World of Secrets from the BBC World Service. Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Let's pick up now on some of the points raised in our last conversation with Ashley, Kay and Kiosha. They mentioned reproductive freedom, the right for a woman to have an abortion, which is likely to be a key election issue for many. And that right is now restricted in many states after the US Supreme Court, with three Trump-appointed justices, overturned in 2022 the long-standing constitutional right to choose. But for our second conversation, I'd like to start with Ashley and Kay's concerns about race and how, in particular, black men might vote. Might they go for Donald Trump over Kamala Harris when it comes to what they call pocketbook issues, the cost of living, business costs, taxes? Let's get the opinions of three male Democratic Party supporters. Matthew's a young voter in the Midwestern state of Indiana. We will hear from him in just a moment. But firstly, Daniel is a business executive, originally from Ghana. He's in Texas. And John's a lawyer in the southern state of Georgia. Daniel and John are both black.
I have absolutely no issue with seeing a black woman in office. Oftentimes when you get intelligent, high-performing black women in those sorts of powerful roles, they tend to run circles around people.
The point made to us in the other conversation was that when it comes down to it, some people might vote based on the economy, based on higher prices, not based on the candidate's background.
There's only so much that the president can do at the end of the day, and the economy is going to have to heal itself. I'm not sure exactly how much power the president really truly has when it comes to widespread changes to cooling off the economy, cooling off inflation. Most of that really seems to come down to the Congress.
I want to bring in Daniel, who's in Dallas, Texas, a reliably Republican state, although the margins have narrowed in recent years. How do you, as a black Democratic voter, see Kamala Harris?
Well, personally, I'm not a big fan of hers, but my vote for Kamala would be a vote against Trump, pretty much. But then I still think she's capable. I mean, she's been VP for almost 4 years now. You know, if she becomes president, I have absolutely no problem with it.
You'll know that there have been a number of Republican Party elected officials who are African-American men who've been going to various states holding cognac and cigars evenings saying you need to consider voting for the Republican Party like them. What do you think of that?
As much as they, you know, could go around, you know, having some of these sessions, it still doesn't sway me. What I'm concerned about is the man at the top of the ticket. And I've seen 4 years of that administration. It was chaotic. It was a big revolving door. And I don't have any appetite to see 4 more years of that.
And of course, whoever wins the White House is going to have to win support from people of every background. White Americans, Black Americans, Americans of color, those who've come recently to the country, those who've been in the country for a while. So let's cross then to Matthew, a voter in Indiana. Matthew, you're 25. You're a white voter. Among your friends and family in the last few days as Kamala Harris has taken over essentially the Democratic Party, what have you all been speaking about?
I know from a lot of my more Republican-leaning friends and family, there's some concern that perhaps this was something in the works all along and that this was potentially always going to be the plan that put focus on President Biden for a while and then immediately switched the nominee once the time got close enough where it became more favorable to have her instead of Joe Biden. I think on the other side, you see my more Democratic leading friends and family. Most people I know don't really see her as the perfect candidate in their world based on her policies or whatever it may be, but they're being pragmatic in the sense that she's the candidate for the moment. And I would agree that we've seen what 4 years of Donald Trump looks like. And we've seen the alternative of 4 years under President Biden and Kamala Harris. And without President Biden and making it President Harris, it would still be a better 4 years than the alternative of another 4 years of Donald Trump.
You know, it was just complete chaos, you know, just being on the edge of your seat and just constantly wondering, OK, yeah, what is this guy going to say now? Like, what is, you know, just this divisive, chaotic rhetoric that's just nauseating. I just found just completely just exhausting and distasteful and quite frankly, just dangerous, especially being a Black male in the South. So, you know, I would hope with this administration, we can kind of start to cool some of those attitudes and some of that rhetoric and finally just put, you know, these MAGA people, they're not real Republicans. This monster that has grown out of, you know, just fear and hatred and quite frankly, just outright racism.
Right? Does racism have an impact on your life?
Yeah. I'm a Black male in the South. Of course, racism has had an impact on my life. Racism hasn't gone anywhere in this country. It's just evolved. Yeah, we don't have slavery necessarily anymore, but it's just changed its color. You know, it's just changed its form. It's still very present. You can just look around, you know, being in Atlanta and just go to just the Chick-fil-A or something during lunch break. And you're going to see a bunch of white people in button down shirts and slacks. And then you're going to see the people that are working the service counter behind, you know, the Chick-fil-A. And they're probably going to be all Black people. All the people that are in these large glass buildings that have access to all the wealth, they're all white people. The people that tend to work in the service industry positions tend to be Black people. There's a reason for that. It's a systemic problem.
I think my life was a little more, I think mine took a little different turn than John's. I wasn't born here, obviously. I had my undergrad in Ghana, moved here. And once I got here, I knew I had to, you know, get higher education. So, you know, when it comes to having access to certain opportunities, you know, I already came here making my mind to get into certain areas, you know. So, I didn't necessarily go into areas where I can say that there was blatant racism against me. However, to John's point, if you look at the statistics, it just goes to support what John is saying about not having that equitable distribution of wealth across, you know, all demographics. So, but personally, I wouldn't say I've had that direct experience to know that I've been locked out of certain opportunities because of my background. You know, I may have encountered certain things that I just brush off as just maybe nonsense, but not necessarily attributed them to racism necessarily.
We began by speaking about Kamala Harris. So let's end by speaking about her with a very simple question to each of you. Do you think she'll win?
I think she can. I do. She, like, I will be candid. She wasn't my first pick initially, but it seems that she's definitely going to win the nomination. You know, I think she can pull it off. I hope she can pull it off. I mean, because just what we're up against. You know, here's the thing. The real issue with Donald Trump isn't necessarily, we've had 4 years of him. We know that he's full of it. You know, anybody that knows what's going on knows he's full of it. But the real danger with him is what he would do to the Supreme Court. It's become a completely illegitimate institution. It's completely corrupt. And if he had the opportunity to pack the Supreme Court with more of his MAGA Republicanism crazies, that is a long lasting mm-hmm. effect that would go on for years and years and decades, potentially. And that's the scary part.
We do need, as a country, you need to be, you know, much more united. I don't know who can play that role. I think that, you know, the Democratic Party is better suited to bring more people to the center rather than have this polarized type of society we have today.
I do think she has a good chance at winning if she stays focused on what another 4 year of Donald Trump looks like and continue to sell a message of sort of political unity and a return to sort of the normalization of politics and not necessarily one where Americans are feuding with each other and continued to divide along party lines.
Matthew, Daniel and John, three Democratic Party voters. Our thanks to them and to all of our guests. And it's interesting, isn't it, that like the Republican supporters who joined us last week, this week's guests all talk about uniting the country. I'm James Reynolds. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
is a kind of vigilante killer.
He killed at least 19 people during the 1980s in South Africa.
Very dark times.
People were desperate. We were looking for him. We couldn't find him. And nobody knew where he was.
Every single one of his victims was black.
He reached such a stage where he was now hunting.
World of Secrets from the BBC World Service. Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.